Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I'm so excited to be here for our 7th season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show, Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it. And it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor to hold space for the coming out and coming into self stories our guests share. And today is a very special and exciting day and episode and moment because it is the first time ever that I have a co-host with me, and it is a collaboration that is so important and so amazing. And it is a partnership with Good Vibes, and it is also a partnership. Finn.
Do you want me to take this one?
Yes, Finn. And then I'll introduce you, but please take this and then I'll introduce you.
Yes, absolutely. We are super excited because Good Vibes has an exciting new partnership with Trans Thrive and She Boutique, which are two organizations that are making a tangible difference in the lives of trans folks, specifically trans women of color and other trans and GNC communities of San Francisco and the Bay Area.
Yes. See, this is why we have co-hosts. And also I learned that Finn is a theater person and was an improviser. And so that was a perfect example of having each other's backs. So thank you, Finn.
Community is key.
Community is key. So let me introduce to you, Lisa Finn, aka Finn, is a queer Brooklyn-based sex educator for Babeland and Good Vibes. Since starting with Babeland in 2016, Finn has hosted countless interviews and workshops, as well as podcasts in print and digital publications on topics like beginner's tips, BDSM how-tos, spicing up date night, self-care and sexual wellness, and, of course, the latest sex toys and trends.
Thank you so much for having me on. I am also super, super excited to introduce our guest, who is a dear friend of mine and an absolute icon of the industry. Carol Queen, PhD, is the staff sexologist and company historian, as well as curator of the Antique Vibrator Museum at Good Vibes, formerly Good Vibrations, the woman-founded sex shop where she has worked since 1990. A noted cultural sexologist whose work has been widely published, she's written or edited several books, including Exhibitionism for the Shy, The Leather Daddy and the Femme, and the sex and pleasure book, Good Vibrations Guide to Great Sex for Everyone. She has been speaking publicly about sexuality for 50 years and frequently speaks to the media as well as college, conference, and other audience. She debated the question of promiscuity, virtue, or vice at the Oxford Union and has contributed to numerous anthologies and documentary films about sexuality. With Dr. Robert Morgan Lawrence, Queen co-founded the Center for Sex and Culture in San Francisco. I feel like that's not even everything that you've done.
No, but I needed to make a short-ish bio for you so that we didn't like overrun the field with all my, like, I'm like, sexologically and queer activism wise, I'm the person who goes squirrel and runs in another direction to do a thing. And with any luck, it turns out okay. So I never met a project that I didn't want to contribute to in some kind of way. So I think that's why.
What's one thing? First of all, welcome. Thank you so much
for
being here.
Dubs.
What's one thing that's not in your bio that you're like, oh, I should have put that in there?
The thing that I didn't put in my bio, but I would like to for people to know is that I was the co-founder in 1975 of what I believe to be the third gay youth organization in the United States. And we should say LGBTQ youth. We should say that it's perfectly possible that there were youth organizations that never got out into the world and had me notice them, but I'm not sure what they were. It was the dawn of such things, and not that long after Stonewall. So I've been around for a while, in other words.
What was it called?
It was called Growing Alternative Youth. What does that spell? And I was also involved with my college LGBTQ students organization, although we didn't use the terms LGBTQ yet. We just said gay, and many other terms were bandied about, but they didn't find their way into titles of organizations for a while after that. By the late 70s, that was starting to shift, and within the 80s, it shifted quite a lot.
Cool.
Yeah. And the other thing that I should say about this, because this is ancient history and many people do not know it, is that we had a fiscal sponsor, which was a branch of the Metropolitan Community Church, which some people may know was a church founded by a gay minister to basically make space for people. He used the phrase, "The Lord is my shepherd and he knows I'm gay," which in those days, in these days, that's not unpowerful, right? In those days, it was extremely powerful because, of course, then as now, a lot of the anti-gay sentiment, anti-queer, LGBTQIA, et cetera, sentiment was coming out of binary notions in traditional religious organizations. So the fact that somebody from that place popped up and said, "Let's do it differently," really made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And although there was nothing religious about gay youth at all, we mainly wanted to make space for under 21 youth who couldn't go to the bar and make sure that, you know, that there was a support system out there for them. And, you know, we tried suing the school district along the way, but that didn't work out. We really wanted to make that space, and it didn't have to be religious space, but we just so happened to have these older friends over there who had a church situation, and they were able to let us be a nonprofit with them in that way. So otherwise we would have been the first gay youth group to have to file any income taxes. Oh my goodness. I don't know if we could have, that would have been too much of a milestone. I don't even think I would have wanted to do that.
Too much history in one moment.
Some moments have way too much history. Look around, everyone. Isn't that true? It seems really true right now.
Yeah, truly. That's amazing. And what also is amazing to me is that it seems like I'm Jewish, and like growing up, I never learned anything about like the queerness of Judaism, but like there's so much queerness in religion, and like, who would have thought in 1975 that a church would like have, you know, opened their doors to queer youth, right? Like, but there's so much of that throughout history, and I wish that we would have been taught, you know, throughout religion, that I feel like that would have just helped so many people, and to not have felt so isolated.
I feel like that's really true.
You know?
It would help the people who are carrying around this burden of opprobrium too, like, because they've not gotten the whole story and varying perspectives on their story to just make it richer and make it more real and make it reflect history better. And so people are, you know, as our techie community would maybe say, they're not working with a complete operating system. And I just wish that cutting people out of history wasn't a strategy that folks think would be a good idea, because it's not a good idea. It's never a good idea. And it'll come around and be seen again as the mistake and the stupid and hateful strategy that it fundamentally is.
I also love learning this about you because I got my start in sex education working for a queer youth crisis center as a peer sex educator. So I love discovering that we sort of share that root. Speaking of root, little segue, Dubs, the podcast is called Thank You for Coming Out. So we all have multiple coming out and coming into self stories. And we want to hear one of yours.
Well, I'm gonna tell you a very short one and then a slightly longer one just to close out. I mentioned suing the school district when I just was telling you this little tale of my origin story, and we did that so that so that kids who were queer in the school district in the town where this was happening, Eugene, Oregon, at that time, would be able to see a little ad in the school newspaper saying that there was a support group out in the community for queer youth. And of course, the school was like, no, we can't do that. So we called the press, we called the ACLU and we called the press. So we did have a lawsuit for a little while before it crumbled and was not able to be completed. And I was the person, of course, of all of, surprise, surprise, I was a person who jumped up and said, oh, sure, I'll talk to the press. So I came out to my city in the pages of the Eugene Register Guard. And I think there might even have been a little tiny photo of me. I can't quite remember, but that sticks in my head. And so not only I, but also my poor mother got phoned death threats after this. And I was like, leave my mother alone. She's not queer. I mean, I don't think she's queer. Who even knows, right? Some parents don't tell their kids the fine print of their lives, but that was a pretty substantial coming out, a significant one. But my original coming out, I've been working up to coming out as something or other for a few years in my teens. I went to a girls' school in Germany as an exchange student, and I was looking around and going, ooh, girls! And so that was a thing. And then I got back and I wound up being able to take the very first gay studies class taught by students. In the 70s, there was this whole phenomenon where students got to teach classes and a professor would sort of hold down the fort for them with the administration, and they could give credit. So I got credit for taking the very first gay studies class, and it was extraordinary. Learned a lot of history, and the grades for my school year, freshman year, were sent to my parents' home. So my dad opened my grades, and it said gay studies on there. I did get an A. I just, you know, not to brag, but I'm just saying I gave it my all. And so when I got home, Dad was like, freaking out. And the first thing was like, don't tell your mother, it'll kill her. And the second thing was, I thought I raised you to be somebody. I thought I raised you. Maybe you'd go be a lawyer or something like that. Your mother wants you to work for the UN. How did they even know that the UN was out there? I mean, we lived in rural Oregon, but anyway. And now you're telling me you're homosexual. And I'm like, Dad, it's not a job description. I actually am probably bisexual when you get right down to it. I don't know. Let's talk. Let me know if you have any questions. And he had many questions, including, this was really quite something. Remember, we're in the 1970s here. He said, do you think the woman that I used to teach school with in even more rural Oregon than we live now, who had a woman that she lived with, and they had a little dog, and the woman knitted and cooked her dinner all the time and wore a skirt, and the person who was the teacher with me had a ducktail haircut. Do you think that woman was a lesbian? And I was like, Dad, I haven't seen her since I was 9 years old, but I'm pretty freaking sure she's a lesbian. Yes, I think you have met a lesbian. And then he was like, what about this guy that I used to work in the Forest Service in the summers with? And he'd been over to the house a bunch of times. He was a cartoonist. He was just a fabulous guy. And I had no idea that guy was gay. And I looked at him again. I contacted him. I was like, oh, hey, my dad. And I had a talk. My dad had better gaydar than I did in 1975. And I'm like, how can this even be? So then, of course, we couldn't tell my mother because it would kill her. So then we were about, then I was about to go talk to the press. So we had to talk to my mother. And my mother just listened. It was all serious. We have to talk to you about something regarding our daughter. It's very important. And mom just said, oh my God, I thought you were going to tell me you were pregnant. That was all. Only half as likely as it would have been otherwise, mom. So that was some of my early coming out. And of course, as many of us have, I have come out multiple times in multiple ways as multiple things over time. But I'll never not have that foundation be part of how I'm queer every single day. You know, it had ignorance and acceptance all swirled together, like so many other people's who are at least fortunate enough to have the acceptance show up when the ignorance hasn't made too much of a negative dent yet. You know, may we all move in the direction of less ignorance. But I was so, honestly, so moved to see my dad make that process fast. It was really something. And it gave me a little more understanding of what might be possible in the world. Because when you're in an us and them community situation, right? I mean, I'm sure that this might resonate for both of you in varying ways. When you're in that situation, it's easy to imagine that the other people are the other and they will never understand you. And all you have to do is, you know, you have to work up a way to stay safe, but they're not going to help you stay safe. And it's more complicated than that. Not always, but in the aggregate, it is. So I'm glad that I had that backstory because it gave me a little more nuance than I would have gotten early on, I think. Thank you for asking.
Thanks for sharing. I love these stories, and glad that you were met with generally acceptance, and also how your mom responded reminds me so much of kind of like when I do a lot of educating around like queerness and queer identity, and I always like a lot of times my initial like instinct will be like, this person's going to judge me. Or like, I'm like, if I'll go into a room of like it's like a board of some like synagogue, it's like all old white men. And I'm like, they're going to be the worst audience I've ever had. And then they're always the best. Or it's like teenage boys. I'm like, these kids are going to troll me. And they're the most insightful, kind. So it's always like, they're never what I think it is. And so it's always like how you were like, this is going to kill your mother. And in reality, it's like, meh. You know, it's like, I thought it was going to be something else. Like, just remind, like, it's just what I'm trying to say is it's such an important reminder to go into these kinds of interactions, not with just like with an open mind of like, I don't know how this person's going to react. And I know that there's, you know, people have history of like, especially if we have a relationship with them, we might have a sense of how they might react, but also maybe they're going to react in a way that we don't know. They might let people surprise us, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
And I think that's really important because it gives grace to other people, at least until they prove that they shouldn't have any.
Yeah.
And it, makes more space for us to fully occupy the communication that's going on. Because if we self-censor a whole bunch going in, then we don't give the other party any opportunity to stand up and move, right? And in tough times, we want to know where the allies are, and we want to help people go to that side of the line if we can. not everybody should be out there having that be their number one job. There's lots of ways that we have to, you know, hold down the fort for our own self and safety. But those of us who can do that can make a difference that way. And if we prejudge everybody we run into, then we make less of a difference, I think. I mean, I think mm-hmm. that those kinds of communications will never not be important. When we were doing Gay People's Alliance at the University of Oregon in the mid-70s, we recognized that one of the things that we really had to do, to the point of your podcast, is come out more so that people would understand that they knew someone queer. Because, and this, you know, in terms of the whole trans persecution and freak out moment, I hope it's only a moment historically that we're in now, that's part of the mix, right? It's the vast majority of people who are drinking the Kool-Aid don't have a diverse circle of people around them. They don't know the path of any trans folk that they may know. They don't know that they know trans folk. Just you know, as 40, 50 years ago, people didn't know that they knew anybody on the LGBTQIA, et cetera, spectrum, or in the aggregate. I'm not even sure that whole situation is a spectrum, but it's just so important for us to be able to be ambassadors if we are safe to do that. And that's one of the, you know, learning that then, there's a real argument to be made that it set me up for my whole entire rest of my life, because not everybody jumps out in front of a sex toy store and says, "Hey, I'll talk to anybody." As you know, Finwell knows, it's not always something that every single person is ready to do, has the reserves to do, because although we've been lucky to have our company in the space of a great deal of acceptance, real movement toward sex positivity and acceptance in many ways in the last, you know, 30 years, 35 years since I've gotten involved in Good Vibes, that's not the only attitude that's out there. And if somebody's going to come and work in a sex store, it's always possible that somebody's going to come into the sex store and just rant at them. And not everybody should have to have that job. Not everybody maybe is cut out for that. We would like a situation where nobody has to worry about that, but we're not there yet. So we're all doing this together. I'm really glad to have had a chance to tell my story, because maybe it'll shake somebody somewhere a little bit and get the acceptance space unstuck for them. I hope for that.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you get connected with Good Vibes, and how did you like become the person you are today, in the sense of like becoming a sex educator, a sexologist, and among all the other talents that you hold?
Well, there are a bunch of different lines, different threads, right? But one thread certainly is that I probably wouldn't have worked for Good Vibes if I hadn't stepped into the space to train to be a sexologist. My girlfriend in the mid-80s and I went to the library at the University of Oregon, where there is a big box, it's not there anymore, I think, big box of college catalogs, grad school catalogs particularly, because my ex was going to go to grad school and she wanted to figure out where she was going to go. And you couldn't look it up on the internet yet because there was no internet. So you went and you sat down at a really huge table in the library and they dumped a box of catalogs in front of you. And you, you know, rifled around and tried to figure out what you were looking for. And at one point I was just supporting her basically. And she slid a catalog across the table to me at one point in this rustle through the box and said, "This one's for you." Like kind of in a snarky voice. "Hey, what's up?" It said the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality. And I was all, This is for me. Thank you. I had no idea. I had no idea you could get a graduate degree in sex stuff. Let's do it. So that set me on a path to move to San Francisco and everything else that, you know, could possibly have happened after that. I did enroll in this school. And as part of the school, I got involved in all kinds of side projects, including supporting a safer sex party that was masturbation, et cetera, only, and on, you know, in me kind of a situation for a party. And that made one of my professors say, oh, you're involved with that. You should go meet Betty Dodson in New York the next time you're there. The mother of masturbation, some people called her at the time, author of Sex for One, and the person who invented the body sex workshop where you went and learned essentially comfortability and a lack of shame about masturbation. Also some more information, of course, about it and bodies and arousal and all of that. But really the thing that was her sauce there was if there's been any shame for you, and who among us hasn't had somebody freak out on us at some point or another, you can lay the shame down. This is your birthright. This is your thing. This is the way you understand what is good for you and what your limits are and all of that. Be here in it and love the experience. And at this workshop, because I did, of course, go to one of her workshops, who wouldn't, once, you know, you knew that you had a pal who led a workshop like this. One of the other people there was Joni Blank, who founded Good Vibrations. And after meeting her there, a very unusual place to meet a future boss, I think everyone may agree. Most of us do not meet bosses like that, nor should we, mostly. She called me up a few months later and said, how would you like to work one day a week in my store? I need a person on Saturdays. And the rest is kind of history. I went over there to, you know, sell a few things on a Saturday and never, never left. Once people figured out that I was in this sexology program, they were like, let's have you take what we're doing with staff training and zhuzh it. And maybe you could be the person to run the program of inviting people in to do workshops and classes. And it just spun from one opportunity to another, one way of altering the DNA of the store a little bit so that it could grow. I was around the first time that men were allowed to come and apply. I was around when the first man got a job. I was there when the first people who were non-binary or trans started to come out and began to be part of our insider community and in the hiring pool and all of that. So I'm really lucky to have had a that kind of a seat at the changing culture. I got to see into a bunch of different scenes, identities, progress making attempts, and some successes, at least for a while, that were so meaningful. And so, of course, I never thought I would leave unless I had to, because it was the most interesting job I could possibly imagine. And I wish that for everyone, although we'd have to start a whole lot more sex toy stores if everyone is going to get a job like mine. And that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, I guess.
So you mentioned progress there, sort of, and that's on the back end with, you know, Good Vibes becoming what it is today, leaps and bounds from how it started as a mail-in catalog run by a couple of people in one room. What other kinds of progress, maybe in the industry as a whole or sex education as a whole and the conversation about sex, have you sort of seen over this time? I mean, I imagine that it's wildly vast, but anything that really sticks out?
I think the thing that comes to my mind first, Finn, I think the thing that's most important to just making space for me, but also to making space for so many other people, is the changing, the changing understanding about sex and gender diversity, that there is no one way to be a sexual person. In fact, there's not two ways to be a sexual person. So the so sort of the fight against a binary mode, you know, there's only men and women, there's only gay and straight, there's, you know, there's only this and that. It's all this philosophical, simplistic way of trying to erase difference, diversity, and nuance and fluidity from the way we understand our sex, gender, and relational lives, right? There's you know, there's monogamous and non-monogamous. It just goes on and on. People like this either or business, it seems, but they're taught to, at least in part. And if somebody's taught something, you can throw out some alternative ideas and maybe try to challenge it. And so the early thing that I noticed that made an enormous difference for me, and partly this is because, you know, I was starting to write erotic fiction and memoir and stuff like that. But I started to see anthologies being published that were inclusive of a whole variety of kinds of sexual orientation or gender identity. That all of a sudden there was a theme for the anthology that wasn't some straight people are having sex or some gay or lesbian people were having sex. It got more complicated and more diverse. And the thing that was, I'm thinking of one anthology in particular, that the whole theme was about sex toys or sex machines. So it didn't matter what the orientation of the person interacting with the toy or the machine was, although in many cases you learned that in the narration of the story, the narrator would let you know or something. But that wasn't what the call for submissions to the anthology said at all. You be straight, be gay, be, you know, it just wasn't, an issue all of a sudden in this particular space. And because writing sneaks out into the world and gets people thinking about different things. This is why the librarian Nazis are out there freaking the hell out. And I perhaps shouldn't use such a strong term for those folks, but I feel like they're in the mix. If they're starting to talk about emptying libraries out, then the next step is book burning. And I know a little bit of that history. So I'm very aware that kind of targeting not only has broader implications, but that it also lives initially in this business of, you know, the world is getting too complicated and we can't have that. The world is as complicated as it is. And if you just pulled up to the table and understood how many more narratives there are than the ones that you heard already or grew up with or were imposed on you forcibly, because I know that that's the case for some of these folks. You know, I've been around the block. I've seen that happen. Sometimes they actually manage to break out of it. And I wish that for all of them who this describes. But if they think it's simple, they need to go to grad school. It's not simple. It's never been simple. And it won't ever be simple. And they can't make it be. They can mess things up, but they cannot erase it, because they're talking about the whole space of living on this beautiful planet that it's just complicated. There aren't only two species. We're all out there in our own possibility. And, you know, good luck for the people who think that that's a job that they should have, is erasing all of that. Good freaking luck. And I don't, of course, mean that. I mean the opposite. But I just think it's ridiculous that anyone could imagine, oh, I'll just erase most of what's out here. Are you kidding me? All right. Rant over. At least temporarily.
Yeah, it's not possible. They try to erase, and they just, it can't be done. I just, when, as you were talking, I was thinking about like Magnus Hirschfeld and all the like the book burnings and like erasing his whole everything, all of that, you know, the history and the research and like sure the like papers were erased, but that history is still there. We still know it, how, you know, how he supported. Sure, there's, you know, he has his own issues and all that, but he still was there to support the queer and trans community back then. And so, you know, try as they may, you know, we're still here. We're here. We're queer. Get used to it.
I just the idea that people would assign themselves this kind of a job for whatever the reasons. You know, I studied sexology, not psychology. I only know so much about that stuff, but I really wonder how people even think this is possible. It's a lot to wrap my head around, and I hope that your listeners vibe with that, because we've all got, you know, some complexification work to do in this world. You know, it's not complex enough yet to hold the space for everyone who needs to have space held. So, you know, it's a process, and it takes a long, long time, and we're at a very interesting hinge moment now, but it could open the door wider. And I think it's up to all of us to keep an eye on that. You know, no one person changes it by themselves, but we all together keep an eye on that.
Yeah. Well, I also am not a psychologist or any kind of mental health professional, but I do know that people think that their proximity to power, that they're, you know, the more that they are cozying up to the people in power will save them. Which is just not true. It's just not, as history shows, it's just not the case. But what I do want to talk about, not that I don't want to talk about Nazis and fascism all day. But what I would love to talk about actually is this collaboration between Good Vibes and Trans Thrive and She Boutique, because it is so important. And Finn, you described it so lovely as I fumbled earlier. Thank you again for that save. But when I learned about this collaboration, I just thought it was so incredible. And so, really, I would love to just kind of like tee it up to the two of you to talk about this incredible partnership and collaboration. And I got the like very special, like I'm holding up to everyone who can't see this, but it's a trans pride dildo. Like the package, pun intended, that's raising money for Trans Thrive and She Boutique through Good Vibes. So anyways, I'm gonna stop chatting, and I'll leave it to the both of you to talk about this incredible collaboration.
Well, Finn, I feel like you actually have been sort of closer to the gears of the project than I have been. I've certainly had my role to play, and I'm really happy to be here talking to you now about it. But there's been some planning and info gathering and connection happening behind the scenes that like I still haven't met the person that we have been communicating with in human form yet, although I'm going to do that and meet with them pretty soon. We're working on having a reception for the Trans Thrive and She Boutique crew at our Polk Street store, the one where the Antique Vibrator Museum is. So if they want to look around and see the old technology, I'll happily show them around. But the one thing that I was most moved by as we started to sort of go, okay, how can we make some difference about some of the things that are up? So many things are up. I mean, how do you even choose? But somebody figured out that Trans Thrive had moved close to one of our stores, and we were neighbors with them. They had been affiliated with a different organization. They were halfway across town before, but now we're like two or three blocks from each other. You know, we could all go meet up on lunch hour if we all had the same lunch hour. It was just like, let's do the neighbors first. Let's meet up with them. Let's see what we can do. Let's see how we can help. And I just, you know, we don't always get a chance to live our queer lives in neighborhoods. You know, plenty of people live their queer life on the freaking internet, because that's where there are way more queers than there are around them, surrounding them. And, you know, bless the internet for that. It's got some other problems, but I love that we have this opportunity. That's a person to person bumping into each other on the street opportunity. It just feels old school to me in some kind of a way. And I feel really warm about that. But also, you should add in some of the detail that I might not even know about the history of this, Finn, because.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that we've been working on for quite some time. We knew that we wanted to work with an organization that was specific to trans and gender nonconforming folk. And this was even before the constant onslaught of just trash that's happening within this country to specifically the trans and gender nonconforming communities. But it was really this idea that so much of what we do has to do with access, empowerment, community support, like you were saying, even just that close-knit community. And a lot of people sort of have the question of, you know, well, what does a sex toy shop have to do with this? And Carol, I'm definitely going to let you dive into that because you explain it beautifully. But I truly think that making sure that we're highlighting the organizations that are working on getting rid of stigma surrounding, whether it's stigma surrounding identity, whether it's stigma surrounding pleasure, stigma surrounding things like sexual health and wellness. One of the things that I love the most about what She Boutique does is that they're incentivizing staying engaged with healthcare services. So they describe themselves as a fashion forward incentive program, in which if you are regularly getting tested, you're for folks that are HIV positive, they're regularly keeping up with their healthcare services, they're being rewarded by She Boutique. And I think that incentivizing a program and making it not only welcoming, but a positive experience rather than something that just feels clinical, is so, so important. And She Boutique in particular really focuses on trans women of color, who are a hyper-marginalized group socially, culturally, and to be able to highlight this group and be like, here is a service that is by you, for you, about you, and really just uplifting those communities, to be able to say that we are participating in that and to be able to say that we could be a part of the good that they're doing, it is absolutely incredible. And I know that I can confidently speak for the entire team at Good Vibes when I say this. This is a partnership that, even though it has taken a lot to get it rolling, it has taken a lot to get everything sort of together, we cannot be more happy to be doing this. And integrating pleasure into it. I mean, of course, we are a sex toy shop when it comes down to it. This is what we provide. So being able to curate that bundle, like the dildo that you were showing, making something that was body inclusive, making something that was fun and about pleasure and not something that needs to be taken so seriously, and incorporate it into something with this depth. I think it's just a really cool relationship.
I really love what you said, and the part about incentivizing people to go into a care space, you know, it can be scary to go to the doctor or get tested or whatever for any person of any identity, right? But if people are in a community that might be marginalized, even if they don't have any extra fear around the healthcare piece. There might be fear about how they're going to be treated in the space, right? So the origin entity, as I understand it, that Trans Thrive grew out of, the Asian Pacific Islander Wellness Center, is an AIDS era San Francisco institution. And it was a very early adopter of open heartedness and open arms for street-based sex workers and just trans folk early in transition or affirmation processes. And there was just a lot that they, along with a few other organizations in San Francisco, broke some real ground on. And, you know, San Francisco in the 80s and early 90s had to be breaking ground. You know, we were really a spot that the AIDS epidemic very much affected. And there had to be step up from all over the community, from the people in healthcare and the people on the margins and the people who were the A-gays who had enough money to help support other organizations, or just all kinds of people and entities had to make change together. And this is the root system of this cool organization that we're supporting. And I'm just so happy about that. I mean, this is probably the only time we'll really talk about that level of Wayback Machine, you know, in talking about Trans Thrive as we do this program with them, because I'm just reminiscing about the bad old days and the good old days, because of all the people stepping up to make change that time frame called upon and enabled. So there's something just deeply, deeply moving to me about the fact that inviting people into a convivial space to get some nicer clothes, to be able to represent themselves the way they are without having to, you know, utilize their own resources, maybe their own, you know, slight resources in some cases, to be able to, you know, go apply for a job and feel more confident, or just walk down the street and feel more confident. You know, part of the question that you said you'd let me speak to, Finn, was what is the sex toy store doing, you know, messing around with all of this set of issues? Well, in the first place, the sex toy store is a place where people take their intimate selves and try to maximize their pleasure and their ability to experience their own sexuality, sometimes only their own sexuality, right? Sometimes it's, as Betty Dodson helped to make space for, sometimes it's a masturbation based change that someone is looking to have in their life. Sometimes they don't know enough to know which kind of toy on the wall would be the thing that would please them the most. So we're in the position of helping people work through questions that they might have that no sex ed that they ever had anything to do with touched on, because most sex ed isn't really sex education. It's be afraid of this, worry about that. You know, there's only a few normative ways to be one of those. You know, the sex ed that our diverse populace needs isn't an official sex education pretty much anywhere, except for places like Good Vibes. And like the extremely progressive religious spaces, like the Unitarians. And I'm sure that within many progressive Jewish communities, we've got a lot better discourse about that than there are in many other places too. So it's wild to see the way that versions of organizations and entities that had inculcated shame can step up to be change agents. And that's where Good Vibes needs to stand in order to sell a single sex toy. We can't have everybody running around wallowing in shame and fear about whether they're normal enough to have pleasure or whether there's anything wrong with them because they haven't been able to figure out how to communicate with a partner or even quite understand what it is that they might want to experience themselves because they've lived in this repressive space. Not everyone has come up in a real repressive space, but we've all come up in our culture that is still tinged with that repression, as we see very clearly in 2025. So, and they even wrote a freaking plan about it. So we need to be part of the solution to things. You know, we've talked about sort of external rights kinds of things, but an individual person's right to figure out who they are as a sexual and a gendered person and to understand what the baby steps are to get them to a place where they feel stronger there and more full of pleasure. You know, those are a job for sex therapists and sex educators and, you know, human level sex positive activists, the people who don't, you know, try to go after laws or processes, but try to reach people and communicate with people. That's all the work that everywhere in this country, there's a need for this.
It's why we do what we do.
It's exactly why we do what we do. And we couldn't just be doing the work of selling things without, you know, touching people's reality that way. It just, there are plenty of things that can be sold without that level of intimacy, but this isn't one of them for so many of our customers. So it's Joni Blank, who started Good Vibes, was always of the opinion that what we needed to do differently, and this was the secret the whole time, still is. So we needed to have the best quality stuff we could find. We didn't want to sell people terrible stuff. Sorry. And we needed to answer the questions that they had about their own sexuality, arousal process, and orgasm, and this and that, and model communication that was comfortable so that people could step away from this shame space and this space of nobody told me how any of this works, I'm overwhelmed space. Because that's not where you have optimal relationships or solo sexuality or any of it. So that's what we're doing. And it's always such an honor when we get to open our arms a little further and feel like we're doing some extra work in communities and among people who really could use that extra because of the way the community acts.
For sure. Yeah. And it's all so amazing and powerful and incredible. And what I think is everything you said is so, important for communities and for people, in their own like sexual health and well-being and pleasure. But also what I think is amazing too, is that Good Vibes is donating 100% of the proceeds, of the Trans Thrive bundle, which comes with, and also, by the way, everybody, no one asked me to do this commercial. I'm just doing it because it's like so cool, which is it's the Trans Pride dildo. It's the mini wand vibrator, water-based lube, and a toy cleaner on sale for $99.95. And Good Vibes is donating literally 100% of the proceeds straight to Trans Thrive. So talk about giving back to the community and opening your arms a little bit wider. Like, what more could you ask for? Like, that's so incredible and generous. And so for those of you listening, head over to goodvibes.com/, well, go there and it's real easy to find. And I'll put the links in the places where you need to find the links to buy this bundle and support Trans Thrive and She Boutique.
And not everybody who hears your voice is going to have a Good Vibes in their town, but those people who do have a store nearby can walk in and the staff will, you know, when they're ringing them up for the lube that they bought or whatever, will go, would you like to donate to Trans Thrive today? And so 100% of that money, that extra donations that happen just at the cash register for people who did or didn't know anything about this, but decided to support it at the moment, you know, it's like when somebody he says, do you want to donate to the food bank? I mean, we've donated to food banks too, of course. You know, there are so many different ways to get pitch in with our communities. But yeah, we want people to have the opportunity to help and to know that we want to help. You know, both of those things are important messages because, you know, that just strengthens community some more. It means that we're trying to take seriously what's around us. It's not, you know, we're not just a little spot of capitalism on the map. There's a community that gave rise to this particular kind of place. And that community isn't out of our mind. It's still with us. It'll always be with us.
Yeah. And you can even do that on the website. You can add a donation. There's a little pink button. So even if you aren't at the cash register, you can still add a donation that goes right to Trans Thrive. So good vibes.
Thank you for the contribution, everyone.
We'll also be matching a portion of those proceeds as well. So it's 100% of the bundle. It's 100% of any of the donations made. And then we're also donating an additional match percentage ourselves. So we're just, like I said, we're all just really excited to be a part of this, and you know, for us to do what we can to support this organization. And you know, you'll see us doing this with more organizations in the future. And it's like Carol said, you know, we wouldn't be where we are without these communities. We would not, Good Vibes Babeland, we would not exist without trans and queer communities. Whether it's through the people that have helped shape us as a company, through our staff, through our customers, through our communities. Without explicitly saying it, we're kind of big queer brands. We've definitely had a lot of influence by and for the queer communities. So, you know, what we can do, we will continue to.
Well, what a beautiful note to lead us into the lightning round of questions for you, Carol. Okay, so they're meant for funsies. They are, so typically a lightning round is like an either or, yes or no. I was gently called in a few seasons ago that they were too binary. So they are open-ended. So it makes it a little bit more challenging to answer. But take your time, really. And if you want to pass, you can pass just for fun. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Where is your favorite place to think?
To what?
To think.
To think. In the bathtub.
Who is an influential queer person in your life?
Oof. Oof. Betty Dodson. She used to identify as a bisexual, lesbian, heterosexual.
You know what? I met
it didn't cover all the bases, but it made me know that you didn't have to pick just one.
That's right. I met a teenager who identified as a cisgender trans guy. So, you know what? Yep. You know what? To each their own.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
What is a song that you can listen to on repeat forever?
I Touch Myself.
Classic. What's one thing you want to be known for?
I want to be known for helping people get the diversity, the broadness, the possibility and fluidity of sexuality and identity.
I love that. What does identity euphoria feel like to you?
When anything seems possible and the kind of limitations that shame and, you know, social control puts on us don't seem to be there right then.
Where do you find joy?
I find joy with my feline brothers, with the lovely people in my life who, you know, give me support and love and eat meals with me and just make me know that I am so not alone in the world. I mean, somebody like me doesn't ever really feel alone in the world because so much of my brain connects out conceptually to community, right? But that's not the same thing as having people to eat with.
True. Okay, last question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Bagels or donuts?
Oh.
I know.
Okay. This is a really hard one for me because gluten-free. So sort of neither,
Yeah.
but overarchingly, bagels.
There are no right or wrong answers. However, that is the correct answer.
That's the correct answer.
Okay.
I know. And I even say that having eaten gluten-free versions of both of those foods. But I also remember when I could just eat the best freaking bagel ever. So
Where did you get that bagel, and can I have one?
nostalgia. Well, yes. I mean, actually, some of the bagels that I've really enjoyed in my life back before the gluten-free part were people on the West Coast who came from New York who were like, all right, this freaking wasteland. We got to do something about it. So there was a killer bagel place. I don't remember it. The name of it. I'm so sorry. Either one of the ones that I'm thinking of. There's a killer bagel place in Eugene, Oregon that was just that. They were like, nope, we moved here, but we can't stay here unless we can make sure that some bagels happen. Real bagels. Bless them. And there was a place like that right up Polk Street from us too. And, people bring the knowledge of the important knowledge of their work and disseminate it to people who don't have that knowledge. I am there for them, and I'm really there for their bagels.
I could talk about bagels all day, but what I think is a hoax is when people are like, we shipped New York water to make bagels. No, you didn't. No, you
Ha.
didn't.
Ha.
It's not real.
Fascinating. I will let you know
Then
every time that I come in to San Francisco to meet up with the Good Vibrations team, I always bring a duffel bag filled with bagels and bialys. that's right. You have, yes, that's exactly right. I think the very first time you visited, you were like, who are these strange people that I have joined up with cross country? I will bring them some real treats. And that was true.
Employee of the
Now,
month.
I couldn't eat them, but I went into the kitchen where they were laid out so beautifully and all the schmears and everything like that, and I sniffed them. That's what I did. And you can get some pleasure from a foodstuff, even if you can't eat it, by smelling it. So that's what
That's
I did.
true. Close your eyes and ears and sniff.
Yep.
Carol, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your expertise and your stories and your humor. I really appreciate it. And Finn, thank you for sharing your also wisdom and expertise and humor and your improv support. This was great. Having a co-host is lovely. What do you think, Finn? How do you think it went?
Oh, I loved this, but I love chatting to the both of you. So this just feels like a great conversation regardless.
Yes. Carol, thank you for coming out.
I couldn't have lived the life I've lived if I hadn't. Thank you both for coming out. And thank you for making this space. I do feel like a bunch of friends got together and chatted about stuff and ranted a little bit, and now other people get to eavesdrop, and that's delightful. That's one way to share perspective that, I don't know that we get enough of, and I really love to be part of it.
Me too. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.